They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one?
And welcome to Baker Street Babes, episode number 9. We hear of Sherlock Everywhere, not to confuse with the other podcast. Today we have, like, a full house. We have Artie, Taylor, Jen, and Turk. And then we have the lovely Lithuanian, Sigita.
Hello!
Yay!
Hello!
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 So today we're going to talk about all the other sort of pseudo-adaptations, other shows that are based on Sherlock Holmes. We have quite a long list, so let's hope we get through it all. We have a lot to say on all of them.
We always have a lot to say.
It's true. So first off, we're going to introduce Sigita to you. She's going to be the newest honorary babe. Nah.
Hooray!
Well, all right, so I'll ask the questions.
Yes.
All right, I promise they won't hurt.
Okay.
Let's so Sigita, when did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I think I was about 12, and my mother worked in a library, so I read a lot, and I still do. And that's how I first found Sherlock Holmes, through the books, and it was so amazing. I fell in love instantly, but there were only 2 volumes of Conan Doyle's tomes available, and the second volume ended up with the final problem. So I was devastated with the death of Holmes, and I really thought that was it. But after a couple of years, I found out there were 2 more volumes with the empty house. That was amazing. Seriously. Well, my romance with the Sherlock Holmes character continues ever since. It was freshly renewed, of course, with the BBC adaptation. So that's how I found out about the communities of Sherlock Holmes existing in internet, and also, well, about Sherlock Holmes societies and so on and so forth. This, well, from the last year, I found out so much more in this world. I can't believe it. I still can't believe it. And so many like-minded people to talk about. That's just so great. The level of my obsession can be very easily proved because I have a separate blog for exactly for Sherlock Holmes-related things. And it started like a simple little blog just for me to collect things, and now I have 1,300 followers, and that baffles me. That's so crazy. Why?
Yeah. Who's your favorite character?
Well, of course, Holmes himself.
Yes, join my club!
I really, really adored John Watson, but Holmes is my first and foremost favorite character, totally. I just admire him and his mind, how it works and so on.
Oh, that's great.
Well.
Christina's got a friend in company now.
Yes.
What's your favorite Sherlock Holmes story?
Well, I have many favorites, but the most favorite, I think, would be 3 Gary Debs. Because it depicts the most beautiful moment in their friendship, when Watson gets injured and Holmes shows his softer side, how big heart he has instead of his cold demeanor. It's heartbreaking. I can't even talk about it. It really, really, really crowned their friendship. It always seems that Tom Watson is like, well, he's like an admirer of a star, and that moment thought that Sherlock Holmes considered him the closest and best friend he ever had. So this is why it's my favorite, because of that moment, of that scene.
Yeah,
and also there are some fun stories like the Red-Headed League, which always makes me laugh. And so on. And also the scary ones, like the speckled band.
Yeah.
What's so scary? I remember when I read it as a child, I had nightmares about snakes for a long time.
Oh, that's comforting. Okay, so the final question, what is your favorite adaptation of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, from the Victorian Sherlock Holmes adaptations, the first place for me is tied between Russian Sherlock Holmes and Granada Sherlock Holmes adaptations. They are so good, and both are very, very accurate. And as for other adaptations, of course, there's BBC Sherlock, hands down, the best. I haven't seen a lot of other adaptations, but so far it's those three, they are the winners.
Okay. So, America likes to make a lot of TV shows, and a lot of them, I think maybe almost all the ones that we're talking about, I mean, there's two British ones, I think, but otherwise they're all American. A lot of the characters are based off Sherlock Holmes. And I think when we asked people to give us suggestions, the number one was House, obviously.
Definitely.
Exactly. He's so much alike Holmes. I couldn't believe when I first saw it. It was the parallels where it's there, everywhere.
It's actually funny. People can't get away from it because the executive producer of the show, David Shore, actually explained at a interview that he did in 2006, which was shortly after the show was created, that he had always been a fan of Sherlock Holmes and he found the character fascinating. And this is an actual quote that he said, quote, "He was never solving the cases because he cared about his clients. He was actually always rude to his clients. And the more I started thinking about it, the more I started relating that to House. So the name came from that, House Wilson opposed to Holmes Watson." So nobody can argue that that's not the case, because the executive producer says so.
Word of God.
Exactly.
There's so many things that you get if you think, you know, you think about House. The first thing that always comes to mind, and I don't know if that's just because I just woke up a little while ago, but it's the whole Vicodin addiction that House has. And how Sherlock Holmes has his cocaine addiction. Although I think they're kind of used in different ways, where Sherlock uses the cocaine as a way to keep his mind active when he's not on a case. I think now that the series has gone on for as long as it has, House is starting to use the Vicodin as a way of solving the cases.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's like when he's stuck, he has to get high to think of something. Somehow it's a bit disturbing right now for me. I think it's mostly that his pain distracts him. He doesn't want to be distracted.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the other thing too that's so great about House is Wilson playing the Watson.
Wilson is my favorite thing about House, and that might just be because Watson is my favorite thing about Holmes.
Which I think is a totally acceptable reason.
Yes. Or maybe because it's Robert Sean Leonard, who knows.
That's actually part of the reason why I started watching House to begin with, was because Robert Sean Leonard was in it, and I didn't know anything else beyond that. And that's part of the reason why I started watching Sherlock, is because I knew Martin Freeman was going to be in it. The correlation is just...
Oh, it's just amazing.
But I think it's great, you know, House starts in the beginning, you know, he's got a best friend, and it's kind of his conscience, in a way, of Wilson. But even at some point, they end up being roommates, too, so.
Yes, it is a wonderful story arc.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Not to mention that the address that of the first flat that House lives is 221B.
Yes,
221B. When I saw that on screen, I went screaming. It was so good for the creators to add that little detail. It was so amazing. And it also proved again that this character is totally based on Sherlock Holmes.
I saw some suggestion that Wilson's ex-wives was kind of another nod to Watson having been married and then coming after married leaves or guys.
The ladies' man aspect.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All of his ex-wives.
I was going to say, I wonder if Wilson could be considered three continents, Wilson. I could also even say that, you know, Sherlock Holmes kind of created his job. House sort of created the department in Princeton. In the first episode, you actually hear, I think Cuddy even says, you know, we created this whole department for you as kind of a way of finding a place for you.
Yeah, because House is actually, he's a nephrologist, I believe. His degree is
nephrology
kidneys.
On infectious diseases.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of created his own little realm for solving mysteries. And I like the way that he considers so many cases boring. It's very... There are episodes where he's going through case files. It's just like throwing them aside. Like, no. Looking for interesting things.
Well, and the correlation to that is House is always calling things cool. That was cool. That was cool. That was cool. And whereas, you know, Sherlock, I mean, in the TV show in particular, you know, it's always brilliant. Or, you know, it's something jumps out. He focuses on that one little piece. One little piece of the puzzle that's just so cool that he's gotta figure it out.
I also really enjoy the little, there's even more nods here and there to Holmes that are put into certain episodes. There's one episode where what they're working with as a symptom is that the guy's foot itches, and House actually writes, like, on the whiteboard they use for diagnosis, the game's an itchy foot.
There was one episode where Wilson gave him a copy of a book by Joseph Bell. I thought that was nice.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I missed those two. I missed those two details.
But you're not as bad as me. I didn't work out until about the end of season 3 that it was... I went, oh, that's like what Sherlock Holmes does.
Also an episode where they go shopping for a new cane for House, and when Wilson originally walks in the door of the antique shop, House has a pipe.
I remember that. That was so cool.
Yeah, at the very end of season two cliffhanger, House gets shot. And I don't know how many of you know this, but the gentleman that walks in, the patient that shoots him, his last name is Moriarty.
Oh, yes, I knew that. I knew that. I thought, why? Why did they make Moriarty? What happens now when House is shot? And of course, everything.
And it was
else
a cliffhanger. Very yeah. Right spot, right?
I was so angry with that cliffhanger. I really, really hope they didn't cancel that show, but they did not.
What season is it on now?
It is
8. Yeah.
It just started at his eighth season, yeah.
It's, I think, the last season which Hugh Laurie has a contract with. So, who knows, maybe it is the last season.
I mean, 8 years, that is a long time to play the same character.
Yeah, exactly.
But he does it brilliantly.
Yes. And everyone
American
thinks he's
accent.
American.
I think it was a couple of seasons ago he was actually the highest paid actor working in American television.
I can believe that.
He quite possibly still could be.
He might still be. I know he was.
Oh, there was one more thing I wanted to bring up was the music and
Oh my God, the music on that show.
But Sherlock, when he's thinking or when he's trying to unwind, he plays the violin. House does the same thing, except he's a bit more broader in his musical instrument knowledge, you know, the piano, the guitar. And it's almost a way of zenning out a little bit.
I also would like to point out that they are both keen on experimenting on themselves just because of science or curiosity. For example, Holmes is described first to Watson as the one who has tapped his finger to test his new reagent. Well, it was in a study in Scarlet, I think that was the first scene when we see Holmes just sticking a needle in his finger to see if his reagent works. And House has been self-electrocuting himself, also operating on himself, using experimental drugs on himself. They will do anything to prove something they have to school. I think that's this kind of dedication to science is what also makes them so alike.
That whole idea of that big moral gray area, too.
Oh, yes. They do anything that they deem they need to solve the case. For example, breaking into clients' homes and so on. Bending the rules every way.
He always sends his
His minions.
His they call them.
His regulars.
That breaking in. It's very Baker Street irregulars, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that comparison
exactly.
there.
Exactly. But like, he also breaks in himself when they refuse to do it. I saw that occasionally. He has just no personal boundaries.
Of course not.
Oh, the nemesis. Well, Holmes has Moriarty, as we all know very well. And in the third season, I think it was third. Yes, it was the third season.
Yeah.
Detective Fritter. Yeah.
Yes, that's very third season.
that's third season. And for the first time, he has such a nemesis, an arch enemy, just like Moriarty. They are both smart. Fritter even outsmarted and manipulated people around him to get what he wanted. But still, House won. House won that trial. Of course, he had to spend one night in jail, but one night in jail for him doesn't count. He could practice medicine further, but they separated, I think, on equal terms in that place, because Fritter tried to prove that House is not fit to do medical practice because of his addiction and because of the way he treats his patients. The whole story began when House insulted him and left a thermometer in his, rectal area. So this is how why Twitter concentrated on getting to House. And the whole obsession thing with one another, it's so totally like Holmes and Moriarty. They just can't seem to step down, neither. For Holmes and Moriarty, they had the Reichenbach Falls when Moriarty was killed. There was not such a dramatical solution of this fight for House and Twitter. But they just had to separate their ways, and that was all. It was a bit anticlimactic, but I think it was very fitting.
That was a really interesting... It almost... Because for two whole seasons, it seemed like House could get away with anything. And then all of a sudden to have a nemesis come into the picture and say, you're not going to treat me like that. I will do whatever it takes to put you in your place.
You know... Nobody really mentioned either that Cuddy is very much kind of Lestrade.
So Lestrade. I was sitting here and thinking the same thing, Taylor.
Because she's there to, like, rein him in, but she has to admit she needs him. Like, I do need you to solve it, because otherwise it's not going to get solved. And she kind of represents the whole establishment that House is always fighting against and that Holmes is always working against in a way, even though he's helping.
Yeah, and they both know Holmes and House that Lestrade and Cuddy can't do without them. They just can't. They have to swallow it up and man up and accept him with their all quirks and all erratic behaviors and so on, because they get results like nobody else does.
Right. Is that it? That house done?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next on the list is The Mentalist, and this was suggested by a lot of people. But none of us had ever seen it, so that's why Sagita is here.
Bad viewers.
Yay.
Bad. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. So I'll try then to do my best. Well, Mentalist is a show about a former psychic. He admitted himself that he was a con artist who just conned people out of their money. And the business was all good and well until Patrick Jane on TV told that the serial killer that police was chasing hopelessly is not a very clever person, is weak and so on. And he said that he will catch him himself. That resulted in that serial killer named Red John killing Patrick's wife and daughter and leaving him a note that said, if you were a real psychic, you would have known that I would come after you and your wife and daughter, and you will know what is behind that door. The note was stuck on the door that led to the room where the wife and daughter were killed. So he decides to quit his psychic job, and he is hired as a consultant, the California Bureau of Investigation, which is, by the way, fictional, but he consults them with their cases using his brilliant observational and deductional skills. And usually he knows the culprit from the start, but he tries to make them admit what they have done by doing the psychological pressure, giving misdirections, and deceiving them. It is very nice to watch how he profiles people, how he deducts who they are, what are they doing, and so on. It's so very Holmes-like. He himself says that he is not a psychic, and he doesn't believe in that, though his brilliant deductions make people doubt that. For example, one of his colleagues says that he must be a psychic because he's so brilliant at it.
Actually, can I bring up a point? It's funny that you should say that he calls himself, he used to be a psychic, but he considered himself a con artist. But somebody else was pretty, you know, saying, no, he's got to be a psychic. He's got to be a psychic. I feel like there are quite a few stories where Holmes actually, where people approach Holmes and go, what do? Read minds?
Yeah, that's exactly that. Exactly that. And all the other people who are around him, for example, victims of the crime or the suspect, they say, but you are psychic. You are. They remember him from his TV shows that happened a couple of years ago until Rajon killed his family. And they say, but you have been a psychic. Why don't you help? For example, the last episode was when a mother's child was kidnapped. And she invited him specifically because she always believed he was a psychic. Because he, for example, told her that she was pregnant with a boy, etc., etc. And she demanded that he would take the pendant that contained her son's hair and tell her where her son is. And he refused to do it, and she screamed at him, why don't you do it? You can do it. Why don't you believe you can do it? You are a psychic. Why don't you believe in your powers and so on? So it was really baffling for him that she did not believe that he was not a psychic. He was in fact a con artist who conned a lot of money from her. And her relatives were very angry seeing him again because they remember that he almost got her broke.
The one big difference, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I've only ever seen snippets of this show when I'm at work late, he seems to deduce more out of how people react versus where I feel like Holmes concentrates more on the evidence around? Or am I mistaken?
Well, not exactly, because he always goes to a crime scene. He always looks over the body. He sees all the little details. Take, for example, the scene where in BBC Sherlock, in the Studying Pink, they come to find the woman's body and how Sherlock looks over that. Patrick James does the same thing. He always looks around, he notices the details that are not right, and based on the evidence he sees, he makes his own conclusions, which other people can't see, because he works with other investigators and those agents. They don't see the connections that he sees. That's how I think he is like Holmes. But he also relies a lot on the psychological aspects, and he likes to provoke people. He knows which buttons to press, but that knowing which buttons to press comes from the evidence.
Interesting. He manipulates people really well.
Oh, yes. I remember the case with, was it the Milverton case of Holmes when he got engaged with that chambermaid?
Yes.
I think it was. It was Charles Augustus Milverton case. And
Milvey!
The level of manipulation is, I think, the same. Because the ends justified the means in their minds. To find out the truth, to solve the case. Also, at first glance, Patrick Jane seems very charming personally. He seems like very outgoing and even flirty, which Holmes is absolutely not. He doesn't seem like that at all. But deeper, Patrick Jane is a loner because of the tragedy that happened to him. He is very unsocial. He has only one friend, I think, who is also the superior. It's Agent Theresa Lisbon. Of course, the fans of the show try to make them a romantic pairing, but I think they are just best friends. And I think Theresa Lisbon is not exactly like Tom Watson is Holmes. No, I think it's like Cuddy is to House. They are both superiors, but they need their skills, even though they are often admit that the methods that House or Jane use are not exactly suitable, not exactly legal sometimes, but they get results, and that's what matters. They see things and connections others don't see. It's very amusing to watch their banter, and it reminds me very much of House and Cuddy. Also, Patrick Jane doesn't have any dangerous habits. Well, he drinks tea a lot. He's always seen with a cup of tea at hand, and I don't think it's an addiction, but nobody drinks tea like Patrick Jane in that series.
I can test that. I drink tea a lot.
And also no musical skills whatsoever. I don't think at any time played something. Also, the woman. Holmes had Irene Adler, the woman who outsmarted him. And there was the one case where Patrick Jane was also almost outsmarted by a woman. In fact, that case ended up, she admitted that she was a killer, but that was left for the jury to decide, and she said that the man she manipulated, the jury won't believe him, and she might have been released. It was very interesting to see him meet his match in a woman. He met his match in a man, and of course there is the whole red charm business, but to see him on equal grounds with a woman, it was very much amusing to watch. Just like it was very amusing to read about Holmes and Irene Adler.
Seriously, these guys need to stop underestimating women.
Exactly. That's really interesting to see them with smart women and to see them react to them. And also, as I mentioned before, there is the parallel with Grant, archenemy, with a big nemesis. It's, of course, for Patrick Jane is Red John, the man who killed his wife and daughter, the elusive killer who has not left any evidence to who he is, why he does it, and so on. But the level of obsession that Patrick Jane demonstrates to catching Red John to avenge the death of his family is mind-blowing. He said that even his own death doesn't matter if he ends Red John. So that's just like Sherlock Holmes said that if the price to pay is theft, then it's a small price to pay to get rid of Professor Moriarty. Parallels are just mind-blowing with this show. Oh yeah, and Red John is equally obsessed with Patrick Jane because he even risks capture for the purpose of observing Patrick Jane. He is also, he describes himself like he's the same. He's able to see through people. Patrick Jane, when he was kidnapped by some students who copycatted Red John's killings, and he himself risks to be captured, but he saves Patrick Jane just to keep him alive, just to keep the game going. I think it's equally terrifying and interesting to see that level of obsession. If you haven't seen this series, I think it would be a bit spoilery, but anyway.
Spoilers!
spoilers! Warning!
A little late, but spoilers!
At the end of the third season, Jane finally saw who he believed was Red John after catching him. Watching on Jane's scheme, and during that conversation, Fred John encouraged Jane to forget about him, and that seeking vengeance is a waste of his valuable talent and valuable life. And that's exactly what Professor Moriarty said to Holmes to back off, but Patrick didn't believe that it was really Red John he caught up with. However, he killed him. Even though he didn't believe that it was Red John at that moment, he thought he killed him. I don't know how it goes after this, but this case is not yet resolved, and I think there will be at least one of or two seasons. And I don't know if we ever know who that Red John was. It's like a nemesis of epic proportions, like Professor Moriarty was to Holmes. But the difference is that the feeling of Professor Moriarty's doings is only mentioned in a couple of cases only. And Red John's involvement is seen throughout the whole three seasons today. And that's, I think, the main difference now. Well, I think that's it about mentalism. Sorry, it was rather long.
No, it's okay. The next one.
Oh, and sorry, one more thing. One more thing. Holmes is described always as neat, elegant, and, well, to quote Conan Doyle, has a certain quiet primness of dress, a true Victorian gentleman. And Patrick Jane looks just like that, always elegant, always charming, with a three-piece suit. And to think that Dr. House is always
the complete opposite.
Absolutely opposite, with a three-day unshaven beard and sneakers and jeans and t-shirts. And Patrick Jane is just like Sherlock Holmes. He's elegant. I just like seeing him like that. Three-piece suits on men are awesome. So that's it now.
Okay. So, the next one, everyone's very aware of. I really want to sing, like, the theme song, but I don't think anyone else would sing it with me. Person two. Okay, that's it. Doctor Who has been called, like, Space Sherlock, and there's so many different similarities between the shows, and that's probably why we talk about it occasionally, other than the fact that we're all obsessed with it. So, yes, Doctor Who. Who wants to take this one?
Well, I got this one sooner than season 3. It's an improvement on House.
There you go. Do you want to start off, Chart?
Yeah, I don't really know how to say anything since, because when I was thinking about what I would say, I was thinking, oh, I'll intersect later, because I can see that sort of, the Doctor and the TARDIS have the Sherlock and John relationship, and I don't know if that makes sense to start with that. I don't know, I was thinking about all the different Sherlocks and which ones had that sort of asexual thing going. And the Doctor seems to be the only one, apart from 10. But we don't talk about him and his women.
We don't talk about Rose yet.
Yeah, I think he's just so, for him, the adventures and the things that are going wrong are the most interesting to him, just like Holmes and the crimes he's investigating. That's his main thing that he's focused on. Doesn't really have time for.
Yeah, something's wrong, women. Let's poke it with a stick.
Yep. And then you have his companions that are there specifically to serve that Watson role, that standing there and cheering about how brilliant he is and also giving him the human compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially like the last couple of Doctors. I know 10 kept going on, oh, I'm really, really evil. But he wasn't as evil as... But I think now with 11, you can just see he isn't making these choices because he's a nice person or whatever. He's making them because that's the thing to do. And the companions just all seem to be looking at him like, you can't do that. That's horrible.
Yeah.
They're, like you said, it's like his moral compass, the only thing really stopping him from snapping, you know, because he doesn't quite...
But I think you see that a whole lot, especially at the end of the 10 era where you had Donna, where you had that first companion that really stood up to him to a certain extent. Like in the Pompeii episode where she's just like, no, we have to save people. And he's like, no, we can't do that. She's like, yes, we can.
Save one family. I think for 11, as you see, like more of like the dark side of the Doctor. 10, like he always said, was dark. And he had a few moments, but I think it's been more apparent in 11's era so far. And then you do have Amy and Rory who are trying to, like, be the moral compass. Especially Rory, I think, has come into his own. I know I've talked to Artie about this in our little Rory fan club. It was in The Girl Who Waited, like, you're making me like you. And that sort of brought to light that the Doctor isn't always a good person. He tries to be, but some of the decisions he puts his companions in aren't fair.
Yeah, Rory also has this thing going on that John and Sherlock also does, that he's constantly challenging and constantly questioning the Doctor's choices, and also very much saying, this is not okay, I do not agree with this. I think it was one of the first episodes of Series 6 where they were discussing whether they could tell the Doctor that he died.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody said, no, we can't because the universe will blow up. And Amy was like, yeah, but he's done it before. And the Roy was like, yeah, and it did blow up. You know, it was very nice. And I think that's the thing that A. Watson should do. And Rory is kind of a companion that really does that. Like, he's not just standing by and going, oh, wow, that was brilliant.
It also adds to the fact that because he's a nurse.
There's a great quote going around that I think it's a Moffat quote, where he says, Sherlock Holmes is a human trying to be a god. Doctor Who is a god trying to be a human.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah. Because who is the Doctor? He's the cleverest being in the universe. He knows everything. He's seen almost everything. But when it comes down to it, it's helping people that he enjoys the most. So he has that sort of compassion, that different drive. While Sherlock Holmes is not necessarily helping people, it's solving the problem. It's how they sort of counteract each other.
And, don't forget the Irene Adler of the Doctor, River Song.
That's true.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. All the controversies. So yeah, she is very clever. She outsmarts him many times, resulting in his many deaths.
but exactly, she is his equal, like, no companion was. Even Tonna, she was a companion, but she never was his equal. And River Song is one, and I think it's amazing for him to have somebody to like-minded.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that she's a Time Lord as well. Well, half Time Lord.
Oh,
time-ish,
yeah.
Lordy.
That thing is helpful, I think, because he's a loner. Even though he travels with companions, for me, he's a loner because he's the last of his race. Well, except the Master. And for him to meet the Song is, for him, it's important.
I think we probably should talk about the Master a little bit. Cause
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, because when he started, I think he was probably pinned as just sort of like the arch nemesis, the bad to the good sort of thing. And then as you like went on, I think probably with John Sim, you got sort of more of that gray area. But yeah, the Master. Moriarty, obviously, yada yada.
he's got the new Moriarty thing of turning up in a nice suit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
An evil smile. Being a little bit mental.
A little bit.
A lot, okay.
I just find the whole Doctor-Master dynamics, especially with Ten and his Master, completely fascinating.
Ten and his Master, sorry.
Because they're not actually trying to kill each other.
No.
They get all these amazing scenes, and Ten actually says to the Master, can't you see, all we have is each other. But at the same time, they are the flip side of a coin. They look at things in a completely different way.
It's very much like that comparison that Holmes could have very easily been Moriarty. Mm-hmm. The idea that they both come from the same kind of backgrounds, they have the same strengths to a certain extent. But one chose to go with a positive way with it, and the other one negative. And it's something that, particularly like in the BBC Sherlock recently, you know, he's like, we're so very alike, we're made for each other, is what he keeps telling Sherlock. And it's kind of the same thing with the Master and the Doctor, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same.
And I love the scene where the Doctor is begging the Master to regenerate, like,
oh my god,
don't die. And he just literally lets himself die to spite him.
Yeah. I'm not gonna listen to you. I believe it was Ten also that was like, I wonder what I would be without you. So it's sort of like, they've been fighting for hundreds and hundreds of years, chasing each other around the universe, just to like, you know, spit in each other's faces. And like, sure, the Masters like tried to kill the Doctor a few dozen times, but you know, there's always that thing of like, you could regenerate and we'd play this game again. So like, they sort of like give each other purpose. I mean, like, the Doctor can go off and like do his own thing, but the Master, it really is just about the Doctor all the time.
In that creepy, obsessive Moriarty sort of way.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like where John is obsessed with Patrick Chain. Totally the same level of obsession, because he even saves Patrick from kidnapping and killing just because he would have an adversary to play with. Just like Moriarty. They know that they can't live without each other.
It's amazing. Yeah. Look at all the commonalities. I wonder if that's why we're doing this show.
Exactly.
Going back to the TARDIS, being like, I guess that is his one constant companion. And, you know, like, the Doctor's wife, that episode, brilliant. And then I think it really showed, like, that deep, intense connection. The TARDIS didn't always listen to the Doctor, always brought him where he needed to go, rather than where he wanted to go. Which I could see how you were talking about, Turk, how sort of having that Watson aspect in that regard.
For some reason, though, I just want to see the TARDIS with, like, a sort of cable knit jumper on it.
Yeah. Just round the, I can see Eleven knitting one and putting it round. Alright, artists out there, you have a challenge.
Yeah, artist. Yep, challenge.
Yeah.
Cable knit jumper on the TARDIS. That is awesome.
Or maybe cable knit jumper in the form of the TARDIS, you know, the colors and so on.
Best cosplay ever.
Yeah.
Hulock going on.
Sometimes I wonder why I say these things out loud, because I always start something.
I will jump on to the Monk wagon then, which is very amusing. Has anyone else here seen Monk?
Yes.
Only a couple of episodes.
So feel free to jump in whenever.
Okay.
So Monk is about this guy called Adrian Monk, and he was a detective whose wife was killed in a car bomb, and was part of this larger conspiracy. So he has a mental breakdown, and he refuses to leave his house for 3 years. 3 years. Okay.
Well.
I can see what you did there.
Yeah, I see what you did. I guess as a precursor, Monk ran from 2002 to 2009, and according to Wikipedia, it has the record for the most watched scripted drama series in cable television history. I don't know if that's just the US, I don't know. This is what it says. So it was very, very popular. So basically, after he's been stuck in his house for 3 years, Monk becomes a private detective and consultant for the homicide unit of San Francisco Police Department. He is a hysterical character because he has 312 fears and phobias and intense OCD. So he's always rearranging things and not touching people, and it's very amusing. But his comparison to Sherlock Holmes, like, he has very sharp memory, very, like, attention to detail, insight, observational abilities. He can, like, see patterns. And the co-creator, David Hoberman, said that Monk was based on him, but also on Columbo and Sherlock Holmes. So he said that himself. It is fact. Yep.
That's a hell of a combination, Columbo and Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Monk is a hell of an interesting person.
Oh, yeah. That was one good character. I really need to watch it normally.
Yeah, it's really funny. Also, his companion, assistant, whatever, his Watson, anyways, is a nurse called Sharona Fleming. And in further John Watson comparisons, in season 3, she marries her ex-husband and they move to New Jersey.
Oh.
Yes, you see? You see what they did there? It's probably not connected to it at all, but I'm going to say it is. Then there's also, like, a Lestrade, Captain Leyland Stottlemyre, who puts up with Monk because he is such an eccentric character, but he respects him quite a bit. So it's a definite comparison. And also, Monk has an older brother, Ambrose, who's agoraphobic and hasn't left the house in 32 years, except on 3 different occasions, I think, who's very smart, very adept, just, you know, lazy, confined. Like, refuses to leave his house, so it is sort of like the Mycroft comparison there as well.
And oh, legwork.
Yes. I have to leave the house too. And actually, in the original pilot, someone says to Monk, describing him as a modern-day Sherlock Holmes, only nuts. So it's
like, sure, I was gonna say Sherlock Holmes is nuts.
Nuts in like, if there's like three pieces of paper on the table, he's going to put them into a neat little pile. And he's terrified of, I think, of like ladybugs and all these sorts of things. It's just so funny. Monk is a hysterical show. Also really good. It's mostly a comedy, but they have some really dark points in it. The entire time, like, he's trying to find out the larger conspiracy that his wife was investigating, why she was killed, and he finally does that in, like, the season finale. So, all nice and wrapped up. That was my giant spiel on Monk.
It's just looking at the list of shows and of characters that are based on Sherlock Holmes that we've discussed so far. It's quite interesting that the one thing that it comes down to with the ones that we've spoken about so far is they see the world so differently from the way normal people see the world. And I think Monk is kind of taking that idea to the extreme and then some.
Yeah, like all these like main like Sherlock Holmes like esque characters, they perceive things differently, and so they're seen as like being brilliant and yada yada yada. And their mind just works differently.
Okay. I really need to watch Monk. I think there's a part of me that hasn't watched Monk because I'm a little bit bitter about Tony Shalhoub always taking Emmys from Hugh Laurie.
Oh yes, that's the turn left there.
And I love Tony Shalhoub, and I'm sure he's brilliant.
He really is.
Okay, we'll give him a chance.
Give Monk a chance. So I guess sort of bounding off of that, Psych was actually paired with Monk during its run. So Monk would air and Psych would air right after it, which is interesting because they had similar concepts. Like, they're both Sherlock Holmes-esque. And also Psych will have some comparisons to The Mentalist because it's about, like, a fake psychic. It's about this guy, Sean Spencer, and he has a photographic memory, very heightened observational skills, and he gets mixed up in this murder, and he, like, saying all these things, and the police officers are like, only someone from the inside could know this. So he's, like, being arrested, and so he convinces them that he's a psychic, and that's how he knows these things. So he gets hired, then, as a psychic consultant for the Santa Barbara Police Department, so he has to keep up this ruse. So he's very funny, and he's doing, like, the whole, like, when he's ever on a case. But really, it's just all in his mind. So he's the Sherlock Holmes-esque character, even though it's really just the abilities that are similar. Because Sean is this young, slightly hipsterish, very amusing young man. And then his John Watson is Burton Gus Guster, who is a pharmaceutical representative. Ah, someone else in the medical profession as a John Watson! And Gus is—he just hates running around like this. Like, you're being ridiculous, but he does it anyways because they're best friends. And there's also a Lestrade comparison in there, the head detective, Colton L. Again, it's the same. It's like, I respect your skills and what you do, but God, you freak me out and tire me out and why are you so obnoxious? The poor Lestrade characters are just like always exasperated.
Yeah, exactly. The same goes with Mentalist Patrick Jane's friend and superior Teresa Lisbon. She is always exasperated at his antics, but she allows him to do it, to do his thing.
Yeah.
That's the same. The same goes for Lestrade. He allows Sherlock Holmes to do his thing because he's the only one to get results.
So Psych is just got picked up for a sixth season.
God, it's been on that long?
Yeah.
It's been a while, though.
It airs on USA at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Pacific Standard Time on Wednesdays, if you want to watch it. Plugging Psych. We're not getting any money from them, unfortunately. No, it's really, really funny, and it's fun, and so it's more lighthearted than most detective shows, I feel.
Yeah, but that lighthearted thing is what amazes me in Mentalist, because it's always so much fun to see him do his tricks and sometimes mock people, trick them into thinking this and that. And I think House is more like traumatic, but of course there are the playing things with Wilson when they provoke each other. That's always a joy to watch, but that happens rarely. And I think what you are describing about Psych is those two, Psych and Mentalist, are more lighthearted than House and Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm. There was a person who wrote like all their thoughts down about these, and I'm trying to find it because it's really good, and I want to credit them for being awesome.
Was that on Tumblr?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah, I saw that.
This is LolGirl607, and I think we talked mostly about everything that they wrote, but I just wanted to be like, LolGirl607, you're awesome. Thank you for writing all of that.
Yay!
Everyone should go look at it, because it's awesome. Lie to Me was another one that people kept mentioning.
Oh, yes.
I don't think any of us has seen it.
No, sorry.
I watched the first season.
Yeah.
And it's quite good.
Yeah, it is, but it was not picked up for the fourth season.
No,
cast.
It wasn't.
For me, it's sad because I really, really liked it. And Tim Roth is just brilliant in it. And his Dr. Lightman is based on real-life doctor, by the way. Just like Sherlock Holmes was based on Dr. Joseph Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And that Dr. Paul Ekman is a psychologist and expert on body language and facial expressions. And basically, this is what Dr. Carl Lightman is. He has expertise with micro expressions and body language. And he's basically a human lie detector. And he's just as brilliant as Sherlock Holmes because he's got those really great observational skills and manages to deduce a lot of things about people to see if they are lying or trying to hide something. And that's how he helps out FBI and local police to solve cases. He's quite eccentric because he knows when people are lying and he's not afraid to tell them that, and he sometimes comes off really rude and doesn't care what others think. Sometimes he even hurts people that are close to him because of his inability to not see even those white lies that families and friends tell each other every day. The main difference is about him from Sherlock Holmes because he has a family, he has an ex-wife, and he has a daughter with which he has a very endearing and warm relationship. But I don't envy her to have a father who is a human lie detector.
That would be terrible growing up.
Teenage girl, it's just harsh. And especially when she brings home the boyfriend and her father comes home and just throws him out verbally from the house. So horrible. And she always asks him not to profile her. Anyway, he is a bit more social than Sherlock Holmes and other characters that we discussed here because he's friends with his colleagues. He has a best friend and a possible love interest, Dr. Gillian Foster, and she is all equally brilliant, and sometimes I think of her as a Watson to his Holmes, but not exactly, because she is often as exasperated as a Lestrade at his antics, and she's like a cross between those two characters.
I think Watson is quite exasperated a lot of the time.
Oh,
yes. So I think that's just it. There was one woman who outsmarted him, Irene Adler of sorts, some con artist, but there is no mention of her later on in the series, so I think she didn't mean to Lightman as much as Adler meant to Holmes. I think maybe because Lightman is surrounded with brilliant, confident women at work, and the clients sometimes seem really, really great. And that, I think, it's a bit contemporary thing, that this is a contemporary character, and he notices the brilliance of women around him. And Holmes was very surprised at Adler's brilliance and her ability to outsmart him, because it's a Victorian society and they always underestimated women. So that's my views about Dr. Lightman's similarities to Sherlock Holmes.
And thank you for your expertise.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I think we've covered all the big contenders. I know people suggested a lot more, some very, very much. But we obviously can't talk about all of them.
No.
But if you want, you can, like, email us and tweet us and Tumblr us and all these things and talk about other things, and we'll put them up, and it will be grand.
You've really sold me on that.
How good I speak to people. Speaking of speaking to people, wherein I will have to try and be somewhat charismatic, I leave for Toronto on Thursday, my 8.5-hour drive up the wilderness of Canada. So yes, I'm going to make this giant video diary of the whole study and scandal. There'll be people there, important people. And I'll try not to follow them around and annoy them too much.
Just start petting them randomly. Yeah. Bad idea.
And then, Artie, you want to talk about London Expo?
Well, yeah, London Expo is happening from October 28th to October 30th, and I will be going, probably not on the Friday, but certainly on the Sunday, because I'm organizing a Sherlock meetup at 12 noon at the trees outside the Excel, so please come and say hello and geek out over Sherlock Holmes with me.
Hi!
Woo! I would so be there if not for being in another country.
Exactly. I would so be there if not for the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, yeah. For me, the Baltic Sea, but same difference.
What else is happening in the near future? Oh, Taylor and I are both going to Watson's Tin Box now.
I'm excited.
We're picking up Lindsay Faye from the I'm Haride.
Awesome. I've never gotten to meet Lindsay Faye, and I'm excited.
Lindsay's great. You'll love her.
And Lindsay Faye's now on Tumblr, so everyone should follow her on Tumblr. All right, Artie, come on.
What have we learned today?
This is your moment.
What have we learned?
We have learned that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson and the various characters associated with them, like Lestrade and Mycroft, just transcend time and space, that their dynamics obviously work so well that they work in any kind of setting.
The more you know.
Are you a fan of all things British? Then Anglotopia.net is the website for you. With information on British history, culture, travel, and entertainment, Anglotopia.net is your source for all things British. Read up on the royals, catch up on Doctor Who, or start planning your next trip. And for a limited time, you can even download the free copy of the 101 London Travel Tips ebook. Visit Anglotopia.net today and revel in the best the British Isles has to offer.
If this flotillion world has got you crying, won't you two one be mine?
And for those of you who have stuck around, a special treat. Caitlin's done a full version of 2-2-1 Be Mine.
Tell me, have you ever longed to get lost in a London fog, throw your whole heart in the chase? Have you ever thrown a hand to hail yourself a handsome cab, fling yourself into the case? If you have, then you're getting close to the name everybody knows. They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. They could stoop. Scotland Yard, they send you home. You feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine? Are you quite prepared to be a resident of Baker Street, replete with all that entails? It's enough to come join in complete knowledge ain't a sin, although we do love a lot of tales. street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine? If you think our love's too vicious and its object meretricious, we'll just take a different view. They'll consider our reflection that the study of detection to this day rings true. So just remember that you shouldn't place theory before fact. Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1?